Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is Tuesday, and I have the wrong date on my calendar. What date is it? Oh, my goodness. September 26th. And today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 151. We're at the very beginning of chapter 11, and we're reading the first two paragraphs. We're beginning with, for most folks, and ending with, and one more failure. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting for September 25th, 2017, is 10472. That's 10,472. The reference number for this morning's 10 a.m. meeting, Tuesday, September 26th, this morning's 7 a.m. meeting, is 10474. That's 10,474. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Melissa C.K. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Elaine. May I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Melissa C.K., grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks so much for allowing me to do service. I pass.
Thank you, Melissa C.K. I will now ask Deborah K. to read the 12 traditions.
Hello, good morning. This is Deborah K. calling in from Oregon, a recovering and thankful overeater. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah Kay. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. When you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 151, chapter 11, A Vision for You. And we'll be reading two paragraphs, beginning with "For Most Normal Folks" and ending with "And One More Failure." I will ask John Kay to begin reading.
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Chapter 11, A Vision for You. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. That sentence, there was always one more attempt and one more failure. I mean, that's a one-sentence description of addiction, right? You know, it harkens back to that line from More About Alcoholism. Think of the idea somehow someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. You know, and here's another example of why I believe my food problem is harder than my alcohol problem. You know, there are alcoholics who sometimes get, if nothing else, that they cannot control their drinking. You know, my mother was one of those. You know, after hitting a hard enough bottom, she stopped drinking, but after going to meetings for a few years, she stopped. But she had hit a hard enough bottom that she never drank again. But she didn't continue to work the steps. She didn't continue to enlarge her spiritual condition. And to be honest, she didn't have, in my opinion, a sobriety, and I use that word in quotes, that anybody would want. You know, we, on the other hand, we don't have the luxury of never doing food again. You know, we have to eat. And I've always said that I think AA and OA have the word swapped. I mean, to abstain means to stay away from. You know, alcoholics need to abstain from alcohol. We need to develop a sober relationship with the food. And that means continuing to work the steps, continuing to change ourselves to maintain that fit spiritual condition. Because if we don't, I mean, we'll be back in the food. You know, maybe not right away, but eventually, you know. And then it talks about the old pleasures are gone. And that's another place I think slightly misleading to us eaters, because we can still enjoy some of the pleasures of eating. I know I do. But we also have to find the growth and the honesty that comes from that growth, I guess, to know which foods we liked just a little too much, you know. And for some of us, that meant a time of trial and error to figuring out which ones we can and cannot eat like a gentleman or a lady, you know. Most importantly, I think when I read this chapter, I think about how my disease comes with a built-in forgetter. You know, that's especially dangerous when you got a certain amount of time and abstinence in the program. You know, and luckily out here in LA, there's people I admire in the program, and if I want what they have, I do what they do. And what they're continuing to do is to come to meetings, to continue to work the steps, do service, everything they were doing in their first weeks in program. You know, and that's why after 35 years in program, I still go to at least 3 meetings a week, call my sponsor, I'm sponsored, do service. You know, I tell sponsees that I think length of abstinence is like climbing up the outside of an Empire State Building. You know, maybe I'm halfway up and you're only on the 10th floor, but guess what? We're all just one let go away from disaster, and the higher up you are, the bigger the splat. And so anyway, that's why I keep doing what I do every day, and it's no different from what I was doing in like 1981. Anyway, with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, John. So, who would like to comment on what was read today?
Ginger C. Wendy
Ginger.
M.
Wendy. Anyone else?
Karen T.
Karen T. Anyone else?
Elaine.
Elaine. And what's the personal initial of your last name? Of your last name, Elaine.
Kristen R.
Kristen R. All right. And one more.
Lynn S.
Lynn S. Thank you, Lynn. All right. So we have Ginger C, Wendy M, Karen T, Elaine. We'll need the first initial of your last name, please. Christine R. and Lynn S. Please go ahead, Ginger.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado, and I just really want to welcome anyone who's new or struggling on the line this morning. Similar to what John was just sharing, you know, that last sentence, there was always one more attempt and one more failure. You know, never could we recapture the great moments of the past, and food worked for me for a long time. Food was my friend. And it definitely served me, but as with any disease, it progresses, and then it was no longer my friend, and it was no longer serving me, and it actually was killing me. But I never saw this part in the doctor's opinion, and I'm just so, so grateful to this big book and for Vision for You, how we work this program. I mean, visionaries are amazing. They're working it like their lives depend on it. They answer phone calls. They sponsor like they're, you know, you're always in the book reading with somebody, and I'm just so grateful that we're all privy to this experience. Because when I finally saw that part in the doctor's opinion, my old sponsor used to say, Ginger, sugar is skull and crossbones. It's poison. And I just wanted what she had, but it didn't register. It just didn't make sense to me. I was like, yeah, right, poison. It's bad. I shouldn't do it. But when you really concede to your innermost self and you really understand, that's when you have a chance of getting out of the food and actually putting the fork down for good. But that part in the doctor's opinion about entire abstinence, I never saw that those ingredients were the things that were causing me to chronically relapse and go back out over and over and over and over. And when that finally came to light and I was able to see it, I think when the student's ready, the teacher appears, and I was ready. And then it was simple. It wasn't easy. You're telling me to give up my food. This has been what I've been going to for years. You know, I wasn't going to give up my 24 years of sobriety at the time because my ego is way too big. But I definitely would switch seats on that Titanic and go eat the bite again. But when that started to happen and I could see that change and understand, yeah, you don't put it in and it won't take you out. And then you start to feel better within days. It's amazing how quick this works. So if you're in the food and you're struggling, just put the fork down. Get honest, get clean and clear, and then watch this higher power come in you. It's already in you, but you tap into it. And then you live this life that's beyond your wildest dreams. So again, anyone that's struggling, just hopefully, I just pray for you today that today's pain is enough. You don't have to go down and crash the elevator through the bottom and then keep digging even below it. You can stop today. And then you have to work it like your life depends on it. You find a recovered big book sponsor, and you just do action and more action. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. Wendy M., you are up next, followed by Karen T. Thank you.
Yes, good morning, Wendy M., gratefully recovered in the state of Colorado, and thank you for your service. And I always thank God for the abstinence that I have this morning. And I also love that I learned about this word entire. Entire abstinence saved me, freed me, released me, all of it. All of it, a simple word that released me and gave me freedom. And it is harder to be in the food than it is to be entirely abstinent. It's much easier. It's the easier, softer way to be entirely abstinent. With that, I want to just say I love this paragraph. And it says, normal folks. Well, I know I'm not normal, but not, you know, not like I'm special. I'm just not normal, especially when it comes to food. And I always go to my husband, I'm like, you're the normal one, what do you think? And that's a miracle. I don't know, what do you think? That's a miracle in my thinking. I used to just pretend I knew and was in bondage to myself because of it. Anyways, what I want to say here is that my, you know, I got through life, like most of us, eating. And, you know, the whoopee parties or the, you know, these parties I used to go to, I went to parties for the food. I went to the wedding for the food. I went to the temple for the food. I went to birthday parties for the food. I went to everything for the food. And quite frankly, I got through our dinners nightly because of the food. I didn't stop eating. I got home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 3 o'clock, whatever, from school. I didn't stop eating until 11 o'clock when I was standing in the dark with my refrigerator open, with either the knife that's cutting the cake and standing and eating with the lights off, or with the spoon and the ice cream until I got tired enough and went to bed finally. So I didn't want to do life. I wasn't going to kill myself, but I just wanted, it was like resistance to life. I wasn't going to do it unless you gave me food. It was bearable with the food. And, you know, I wasn't even interested in being with the people that I was with. I could only handle people because I was in the food. If food was involved, I'm going. If there's no food involved in an interaction, there's no reason to be there. I really didn't know what to do with people. People were messy, and I did not know what to do about that. And the other thing that I think is kind of sad, but it's okay because I, thank you God, am recovered today. But, you know, the way I think about how I spent time with my son at a young age, you know, people usually take their kids to places to play, and the only thing I could do was bring him to places to eat. That was our entertainment. I had no other interests. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, I would be out in, you know, I would be traveling with a group, school, whatnot. I can't even tell you where we went and what we did. You know, I was in a food fog the entire time. I don't have memory. I don't remember. And today, life is, what is that, Kodachrome? Like, it's in 3D. It's in a lot of color. Thank you. And it's fabulous. And I'm so grateful. Thank you for letting me share it. I pass.
Thank you very much, Wendy M. Karen T., you'll be followed by... Can you hear me? Oh, Karen, I'm sorry. I was talking and I didn't realize I was muted. Karen T., thank you very much. You're up next, followed by Elaine. Please go ahead. Oh, Karen, star one to unmute. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yay.
Okay, great.
Hi, this is Karen T., recovered compulsive overeater in Louisiana. So I really agree with this, that for me, eating meant not just normal folks, but before it got bad, eating did mean conviviality, companionship, and imagination. But then it didn't. And during my last days of having eating, old pleasure was gone. And in early abstinence, it was really hard to be abstinent too. I would go places and would be abstaining, but be full of self-pity. Poor me. And then sometimes I would be overeating, and then it would be, should I eat more? Should I not eat more? It was all about me and trying to control the food. And it was a heartbreaking obsession. The obsession, just thinking about me and my food at parties, what I was going to eat, what it was going to stay on my diet today, was Well, I'm here to tell you that I have recovered. And last Saturday night, my husband and I went out with two other couples to a fancy restaurant. And I felt joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life was good while abstinent. You know, that was fantastic. And so when I read this morning, I'm like, yeah, that's what I felt like on Saturday night. So working these steps bring about the miracles of this program. And I was able to abstain, eat on my food plan while I was there, and people around me were not, and I was not in self-pity, and it was not an issue. I was able to be there and be part of the joyous intimacy and conviviality and companionship, and it wasn't all about me and my food. There wasn't the self-pity. So that's a miracle. So it's not a miracle of control. It's a miracle of surrender. And I can't really say more than that, but I can't control once I put certain foods into my body. So I have to not have them at all. And now that's easy to do. So I'm not trying to control the substances, my alcoholic foods. I have just don't eat them. And there was a time on Saturday night where I had to ask the waiter, is there such and such in this? And he said yes, and so I didn't have it, and it wasn't a big deal. So I am grateful that I have found a way that works. And I think that's all I got. Thank you so much, Elaine, for doing service. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen T. Elaine, you're up next, followed by Christine R. And could you please give us the first initial of your last name?
Sure, it's J. Anyway, my name is Elaine, compulsive reader. I live in Newport Beach, California, but I happen to be on the East Coast working. This has been so far an incredible meeting. It just kind of knocked me down and gave me a little dose of humility. My clients are extremely wealthy, and I see them every day for lunch and dinner. So when we go out, it's carte blanche, anything I could possibly want. Shrimp, steak, lobster, you name it. Anything I want twice a day, I get. And I have to be careful. I have to remember that I am a compulsive overeater with a life-threatening disease. And there's a saying, you can have too many years and not enough days. I've been abstinent after relapsing for about 20 years. Over 20 years, I've been abstinent more than that now. And I never want to forget. And I heard somebody say in a meeting a long time ago, you better respect your disease because it doesn't respect you. And I certainly have a discipline and a bottom line that I have never crossed in my 20, I guess it's 22 years. However, I eat all foods in moderation. And that's just what works for me, and that was what my truth was. But because of that conviviality, that joyfulness, I am finding that when I'm with these people, okay? And I have to be careful. I better respect my disease because it doesn't respect me. And the disease chats at me sometimes. I am 95% free from my eating disorder, from a violent, violent eating disorder. I never know when we're going to go to dinner. I never know where we're going to go. It could be at 6 p.m. It could be at 8 p.m. And I am totally free if I maintain that simple attitude that you guys are talking about. and talk to God every day, which I do, get to mostly phone meetings because of my travels. And I'm very, very grateful. Okay, Elaine, again, Elaine J. from Newport Beach, California. Thank you for 12-stepping me, you guys.
Thank you, Elaine J. Christine R., you're up next, followed by Lynn F.
Hi, this is Kristen R. in Virginia. I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict. I just had to share today about today's reading because, I too took away from it. I have to remember what my last binge felt like. I have to remember how awful it felt to take food out of the garbage. And I have to remember that feeling of being out of control, because if I don't remember, then I can't help a newcomer. Because I am her and she is me, or he is me, you know, that we are the same. And if I don't remember that, then my ego steps in and takes over and wants to run the show, and I try to take my will back. And the other thing I have to remember too is, you know, I was trained as a social scientist. I want to explain everything away, and I want to explain to, you know, sponsees and whoever will listen exactly how my food obsession was lifted. And the truth is, I don't know how. My higher power did it, and I can't explain it. And I still, to this day, feel kind of uncomfortable saying that because, gosh, that just sounds so irrational. But it's the truth. I mean, the way I used to eat and the things I used to eat, to, you know, and the neutrality I have around the food now is a phenomenon. I can't explain it, even though I want to. I really want to. But all I can say is that I worked the steps several times, and then honestly, truly honestly, the big book way, and the obsession was removed. And I have a clarity and a freedom that I've never known before and that I'm so grateful for. I still have problems. I still have crazy emotions. I still get resentful and fearful and selfish and dishonest every single day. But I have a program now that I work, and that helps me manage those feelings. So thank you for letting me share that. I pass.
Thank you, Kristen R. And Lynn S., you're up next.
Good morning. This is Lynn S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. I have never in my life experienced that when I was eating. I was born a compulsive overeater. I was a fat child. Food was always something that I was either denied, and I was watching other kids eat it because I was too fat and couldn't eat that and they would tease me, or it was something that I snuck and had on my own, eating it for that sense of ease and comfort that immediately came with the first bite, because being around other people and not fitting in, literally, figuratively, being teased about my size, being chastised for what I was eating, there was no pleasure in that. There was no joyousness in that. It is such a hell on earth to be trapped by something that gives you such a sense of relief, but is also compounding the problem every time you put it in your mouth. And it's so funny. Like, I never, you know, it talks about program when we are being reborn, but I never got anything back. I didn't get the old life back. Thank God I got a new life, a better life, because I never had that joyousness. The only time I ever had that fun around food is if I was with an eating buddy. And then it was fun because we would eat copious amounts without feeling chastised. That joy and that sense of ease and comfort and that fun, that would come then, I must admit, but only with an eating buddy. Other than that, my life surrounding food and eating in public or with other people was a shameful experience. And my whole life was one more attempt one more doctor, one more counselor, one more diet pill, one more half a Swanson TV dinner doled out by my mother, one more attempt. I'll never forget at work, you know, going off to a fat farm and thinking this will be it, and coming back and eating on the plane and gaining my weight back, and then trying one more time and having them all send me off and good wishes. And I just couldn't do it. And when I joined OA, I never told anybody because I couldn't bear this to be attempt another, you know, 152 that failed as well. And what a miracle, because this program of action modeled after the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. And what I have now is a life full of conviviality, companionship, colorful imagination, joyous intimacy with friends, and feeling that life is good. I have that now. And for that, I am so grateful. And I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Lynn S. So we are on page 151, chapter 11, A Vision for You. And we're reading the first two paragraphs and commenting on both, starting with "For most normal folks" and finishing with "And one more failure." Who would like to comment on what we read today?
Leah T.D.
Leah T.D.
Sue G.
Sherry K.B.
Sue G. Sherry K.B. Anyone else?
Annie R.
Annie R. I think I may put my name on the list today. And one more? Was that a Julie? I thought I heard one more person, but let's go with this. Leah T.D., Sue G., Sherry K.B., Annie R., and Elaine B. Leah, please go ahead.
Thank you so much for everyone on the line. What a wonderful meeting. Leah T.D., recovered a compulsive overeater in California. When I think I came to Overeaters Anonymous when I was 17, almost 30 years ago. And for 12 years, I worked to become a normal eater. And I'm also one of those people. I've never been a normal eater. Since a little child, I was a heavy child. When I looked at food, it wasn't normal. I didn't know how to look at food normal, how to eat normal. I don't have any experiences, any memories from any party of any age where I could enjoy the company of people without worrying about the food. And it was just a horrible existence because I came to OA and I would go to AA because, you know, I wanted to understand what alcoholics do or NA. And what I heard in the rooms of those programs is that they did it until they enjoyed doing it. They had fun, parties, you know, sleeping with other women, whatever, waking up to someone strange. And that was never my experience. I never wanted to do. I knew every time I was getting in the food, I knew what's going to happen. I knew how I'm going to wake up in the morning. I knew the pain. I felt it every time, the regret, feeling different than others, feeling heavy. It was just devastation, hopeless. And so I never had the experience of being normal. And for me, actually being around people was torture because I knew I was a violent eater. And I knew that if you saw that, the way I eat, you would be either disgusted or afraid for me. And so I would never show people how I ate. And that means a torture, being in a party. I would say, okay, like 3 hours wedding now. I'm going to have a salad the whole time thinking about when am I going to get home and eat the way I know how to eat. And so I couldn't be focused on anything, not on people, not on even the food was not enjoyable. Nothing was, it's torture for me. And I'm so grateful, like was shared before, that God has removed, has separated me from food. 17, you know, February 28th of 2000, he just sat like a big elephant between food and me, and I don't know how it happened. It just did. I was done. It was over. It was hurting. I couldn't do it anymore. And today, I can enjoy being around people. And I also have a better understanding of what I was trying to do, the whole thing of dieting and going, you know, exercising. This was my ideas of how I'm going to solve this problem. And it really, to serve me, to serve Liat, so she'll be thinner, so people will look at me and say, wow, you got your life put together.
Gentle reminder.
Okay, but abstinent is different. Abstinent is for me realizing that I have an allergic reaction to food, and that's why I am eating that way today. I love you all. Have a great day. I pass.
Thank you, Liat. Sue G, followed by Sherry KB, please.
This is Sue G. Thank you, Elaine, for your service, and I wanted to thank everyone for coming on this line. I've been coming for about 3 months, and I feel like I've learned more about this big book in the last 3 months than I've learned in over 3 decades in the program. And I wanted to focus on the first, this paragraph. I remember the good old days with food, especially with my family. All holidays were centered around food. And now I have joyous intimacy with friends, and it may or may not involve food, but it never is about food first. And then the last line, there was always one more attempt and one more failure, and that brought up for me about diets. I was a poor dieter, and there was always one more diet, and it was always one more attempt at a diet and one more failure. I just was an abysmal dieter. So I think with that, I'll pass, and thank you all for being here.
Thank you very much. Sherry KB, you're up next, followed by Andy R.
Good morning, Elaine. Good morning, everybody. This is Sherry KB in Northern California, grateful, recovered, compulsive by reader. And thank you so much for your service, Elaine, and welcome everybody on the line. This paragraph is so interesting to me because it starts out with, for most normal folks, and I'm so far from normal, and the conveniality, which means I looked it up because I always like to look up words that I think I know, and this says, it says festivity, feasting, a banquet, food, drink, and good company. And so, you know, I had that in my life at times, but I know that I was born a compulsive overeater. I also had a family that didn't know I was a compulsive overeater, but contributed to it by trying to always put me on a diet or whatnot. And so I learned early on to do a lot of exercise. I was very involved. I was very physically active as a kid and all kinds of sorts of things. Of exercise, and so I had this false sense that I wasn't because I could eat, you know, and then exercise, and so I was always very busy doing things, and so I didn't know this, and so as I got older, the old pleasures started going away, and, you know, I would be so focused on the food rather than the company. You know, it talked about what can we, you know, in the other chapter, we were talking about what can we bring to the occasion. And it was always me and what I could get out of it and what food I could get out of it and how I could get away with it. And I was always doing that, always having that in my mind. And there's sometimes that I wouldn't. So my disease was cunning, baffling, and powerful because sometimes I felt like I did have it under control. And so that was the disease part of my disease, because it tried to convince me that I could do this, that it would be different this time. And so I definitely had what I thought some new miracle of control that would enable me to do it, but I always ended up with more attempting and more failure. That is definitely what my disease would do with me. And this is just, to me, a reminder, because when it says it means release from care, boredom, and worry, joyous and intimacy with friends, you know, I have that today being an abstinent person, being a step guide, being useful, and being able to enjoy my life, and with God's help, of course, due to staying abstinent. And so I'm just really grateful to be reminded of this because I never want to forget, because my disease would love for me to forget. And I never want to forget this, and that I'm not normal, and that's okay, and I accept that today. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry K.D. Annie R., you're up next.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi, thanks everyone for your service and for being here today. Annie R. from PA. For most folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, colorful imagination, release from care, boredom, and worry, joyous intimacy with friends, a feeling that life is good. Amen to that. That's how it was for me. That's how it was before my addiction blossomed, before my flower bloomed that day. And, you know, it was always there before. It was like an allergy in remission, I guess. You know, but that's how it was before. Before all this ugliness started, I went from not wanting anything to do with food in my very younger days. I wasn't anorexic or bulimic. I just wasn't interested in it. I went from that to savoring food, to inhaling food, to not being able to breathe because of the food. And, you know, then the confusion started. And it started with the fun, you know, with others. Oh, let's get together and get 4 hoagies and 27 pizzas and, you know, a case of beer. And, you know, and then not so fun. And then the physical illness. And then the fear started. Then the fear started. Like, what's going on? I don't seem to be able to be in control of this anymore. I can't decide anymore. You know, my mental obsession was deciding for me. And, you know, then the fear grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And I need to stay humble. I have to stay humble because... like the big book tells us on page 568, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I have to have those. They're essential. I have to have those because I can never think that I'm in charge because I'm not in charge, because I know deep, deep inside with everything in me that my human aid fails me utterly, utterly every time. And the whole big book tells me that my human aid fails every time. So, you know, then we read here, the old pleasures were the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. Well, sure. And what's that new miracle? That new miracle is my higher power, my God. And he will never, ever let me down. He will never let me down. It is me that forgets. Or me that decides. I have to remember, I cannot decide. I have to reach up, and I have to count on, and I have to trust, and I have to have total faith that my higher power, who is only God, can get me through this, and he will every time. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Annie R. This is Elaine B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts, and I'd like to share a little bit of my experience with this. And I remember as a child that, you know, our happy, joyous times together as family were going out for ice cream or donuts, always followed by a rousing chorus of thank you, Papa John. And my family fell apart later on, and I continued to eat as a way of trying to relive those times, but then I found other things to deal with my pain and my confusion and just, you know, my addiction. and, you know, I always continued eating, but I danced a lot. I danced at parties, sex, drugs, rock and roll, dance, and the weight stayed off until I put those things down. Thank you, God, because really the lifestyle I was living was deadly by the time by the time God intervened. And I'm grateful for that, but I picked up the food because I still needed access. I still had the hope, that hope for companionship and colorful imagination. And so, you know, I would be at all these places, you know, family parties, things like that. But you know what? The food was the only thing I was building a relationship with. And if there was food on the table, I probably wasn't even looking you in the eye. I was looking at the food on the table. I was building relationship with food. It was the only place I felt safe and comfortable and was getting access to what I thought I wanted, even though I was desperately lonely. And so
I remember. Oh, it's so, it, you know, there's still some, there's sadness in it, I would say. I remember inviting my many acquaintances that I had to my house for a Christmas party, and boy, oh boy, was it well-stocked. And only one person came because I was not building relationship with people. I didn't even know how. And so finally that person left. Maybe I gave him a plate of something. I don't know. But the rest was for me, and I could be with my true friends, you know, and just binge. You know, when I got engaged, I put down the food. And I'm so grateful that I was in a size 18 wedding dress instead of 26. But I was abstinent and not recovered. And even at my wedding, I was still trying to run the show. I had abstinent time. I wasn't, food wasn't in my head, but I was still trying to run the show. And so I've been hearing people on the line saying that they're happy, they're abstinent and they're happy. I'm abstinent and I'm present. I am enjoying relationships, conviviality, colorful imagination, companionship like I've never known. It was the food that had to be put down to get the weight off my body, but it was everything between my ears that I needed to learn how to manage through this design for a living that really works, that has rocketed me into a new dimension of friendship with my higher power and life, and I'm eternally grateful. If you haven't found it, stick with it. Please find it too. We're going to open up the line for more people to share on the first two paragraphs on page 51, chapter 11, A Vision for You. And who would like to comment on what was read today? We actually only have time for one person. Who'd like to share?
Stephanie N.
Yep. Please go ahead, Stephanie.
Thank you. This is Stephanie N., recovered in Kansas, and the conviviality, that's what I was in search of, and I wanted, you know, I just wanted to be a part of something, and I felt a part whenever I was on a diet. I always felt that I wasn't a part of what was going on, and so I was always looking for that way to have the food, to not let go of the food, but have my weight where I wanted it to be. But when I had the food, I couldn't stop. And so it was always that hamster wheel of trying to have both. And then I didn't realize when I came into OA, I was trying to find a way to moderate. And I thought that that's what the point of this was. I thought it was the point was to find a way to control the food. I thought that that's what we were all doing. And I was in the program for about 6 or 7 months before I found my Big Book sponsor, and she's the one who told me that this is a program of abstinence, not a program of moderation, and that I had to lay down those things. But I couldn't see the freedom in that. I was like, well, where is the freedom? How can I be happy, joyous, and free without these things that I love that make me a part of the crowd? Because that's what I always wanted to be. I always wanted to be a part. I had always felt like I was different, and I didn't like that, and so I wanted to be a part of everything. And so when I finally put down, I thought, well, I'm just going to try this. And I didn't think it was going to work, but I'm just going to try it. And when I finally did, it was just a whole new world, and that I can be engaged with people and not be thinking about, you know, when is my next bite? When is the next thing? And just, I was never present before. And like someone else has mentioned already, that food fog, I have had so many experiences that I'm sure could have been wonderful, but I can't remember them because I was in a fog. But I don't have to look back with regret. I just have to move forward, just holding on to this gift of abstinence and being grateful for all of the years I have ahead of me, and just being grateful for today and the abstinence I have today, and being grateful for the abstinence, you know, that I've had, and just continue to hold on to that, and just to do the work, and just hold on to this program of living, because it is wonderful, and there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, and there's no better freedom out there. Any other freedom that you think that there is, or that I thought that there was with the food, is a lie, because there's no freedom if I keep holding on to the food. So anyways, with that, I pass. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Stephanie N. And thank you, everyone who shared today. This will conclude the time of sharing for our meeting, but we still have lots to come, so please stay with us. And we will now read from the Big Book, page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Karen T. please read a vision for you?
This is Karen T. Can you hear me?
Yes. Great. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.